Welcome to The Brendan Osborne Show, the podcast that inspires business owners to connect their actions to their dreams. My name is Brendan Osborne, and I'll be sitting down with entrepreneurs, successful business owners, and people who have a true passion. We talk about their process, the lessons they've learned, and the daily sacrifices they make. Just to kick us off today, if you wouldn't mind just explaining to everyone out there what your current role is right now.
Okay, so my role is a digital marketing coach. And whilst I'm CEO of Blue Wire, I tend to use the language marketing, digital marketing coach with clients.
Awesome. And would you mind just breaking down for us what exactly the company Blue Wire does?
Look, Blue Wire is a marketing consulting and coaching company. Yeah. Whilst we've been around 15 years, we started as a digital agency, yep. But these days we are marketing, coaching, and education.
Great. And that's when we met a couple of years ago. I did one of your marketing workshops, which was a great couple of days. Over the last couple of years, have you still been running those marketing workshops? Had you evolved already? And if so, with COVID coming into our world right now, have you had to make any transitions?
Yeah, we've had to make a few transitions, mate. Whilst most of our stuff is delivered online via online courses, Zoom calls, etc., yep. I do really enjoy the in-person workshops. Yep. You came along to one of our two-day ones several years ago. And in fact, just as the lockdowns hit Australia, I had a two-day client intensive all booked in, ready to go. And we had to cancel that and make a transition at short notice to a Zoom conference for 2 days.
And what was your reaction to the people who were involved in that?
Look, I was quite nervous personally because I thought, how are we going to do a two-day workshop stuck at our computers? And then I thought it would not be as good an experience for clients. But you know what? It was actually way better than I thought, and almost better than an in-person two-day conference or workshop, because people that were in the Northern Hemisphere that weren't planning on flying to Australia, they could all attend as well. Yep. So we had more people, a better mix of people, and the Zoom platform really opened up my eyes just to how we could emulate an in-person workshop, but deliver it in a way that people from all over the world could comfortably attend from their home office. It was fabulous.
Yeah, and that seems to be a conversation that I'm hearing right now from a lot of people that we're working with and friends in that as well, is that most people are happy to take a lot of their processes online, and even looking beyond COVID, wanting to change out a lot of their processes. They're looking to move to four-day weeks. There's a lot of at-home talk going on. I'm not sure where I'm sitting with it yet. I really love that face-to-face conversation. What are your thoughts on it?
My personal take on this, Brendan, is I think the Zoom stuff is really going to stick, personally. I think there's got to be a very good reason to make people travel.
Yeah.
And so I think there's definitely a huge opportunity to make the in-person meetings very special. Yeah. Like if you're getting everybody together, that can be fabulous. I just think they won't be required. I think the normal everyday running of your business, sales meetings, client fulfillment sessions, workshops and the like, can be delivered so much more easily via Zoom.
Yeah.
So I think now that our hands been forced to use these platforms, I think a lot of people will stick to it. But I do think, that being said, that the in-person stuff, it's special to be in person with people. So I just don't think we'll rely on it all the time, and make the times that we do come together a really valuable experience.
Definitely agree with that. So if we're looking into small areas within business, and I'm particularly thinking around the sales process, typically a lot of people would be looking to build that rapport, to get the client over the line, and we're in a time where people are always going to be looking for new clients. So for you in the future, are you looking to do your sales calls on the phone, in person, or would you be happy doing them on Zoom?
In future?
Yeah.
Look, I have always done most of my sales just on the telephone.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah. So occasionally in the past, I've done in-person sales, certainly over the last 15 years.
Yeah.
But these days, it's on the telephone. I might use more Zoom because you can share screen and draw stuff out and explain stuff to people.
Yeah.
But honestly, Zoom would be as far as I'd go. I would probably seldom do in-person sales meetings.
And was that due to just being more efficient working remotely, or was it you found that you had more success doing it that way?
Combination of both. I mean, a lot of the time we're working with clients who aren't in the same city.
Yep.
So it makes very little sense to fly interstate or overseas for a sales meeting in my situation. And look, it's, yeah, partly because it wasn't required. You can have the same sales conversation over the telephone and make it easier for everybody. But a lot of my clients are overseas anyway, so telephone call's fine.
That makes total sense. So what I wanted to get into today, and the reason I wanted to chat to you on the podcast, is definitely around LinkedIn. Over the last year, or even a couple of years for people like yourself, there's been a lot of hype driven towards it. A lot of content creators are on there now spreading their messages, and it's outside of the pure just B2B connection. It is about adding some value and in turn bringing more attention, generating leads through that way as well, outside of the typical messaging. What's your thoughts on how it's changing, the evolution, and as a business owner and to the people out there, what would be the best way to be involved in LinkedIn?
Yeah, so I mean, 5 or 6 years ago, I thought LinkedIn was a pretty noisy, messy platform.
Yep.
A lot of spam, and I didn't focus much attention there. But then pretty much 3 years ago, when LinkedIn started letting us publish videos natively, LinkedIn made a shift to allowing people to publish content. That was a real turning point. And that was when I started putting up videos and a few bits of content that I'd previously published on my blog and on other social media platforms.
Yep.
And when it hit LinkedIn, those pieces of content, particularly the videos, they got way more traction than I was expecting and way more traction than they did on Facebook and Instagram.
Yep.
So I really doubled down on LinkedIn as a platform. And the other thing, aside from the content aspect, is that it's such a great database of business professionals. Like, you know their job title, you know their company, you know their experience, all from LinkedIn, which you don't know that about somebody on Facebook. So it's a great networking tool, and it's a great way to grow a network. And people are open to connecting on that platform, I find, much more so than Facebook or Instagram.
Very true. And for yourself, personally, with you, how you're driving your content at the moment and as a consultant recommending to others, are you putting all your focus and energy towards LinkedIn, or are you still recommending that clients use Instagram, use these other platforms, and how are you going about that?
Videos and content, there's no harm in repurposing that stuff for Instagram and Facebook, and that's what I do personally. But I particularly find Facebook groups as a real goldmine.
Yeah.
So I do teach that strategy to clients who that's appropriate for.
I can definitely see the power in the Facebook groups. So as for how you approach your content, there is a lot of drive now, obviously, to getting as much value out there as possible. How do you structure that? Are you giving away pretty much everything and knowing that it's not about the information, it's about connecting the dots? What percentage are you skewed there at the moment?
Look, I give away probably 98% of my content in the form of marketing templates, blog articles, podcasts, and YouTube videos. But then there's the final 2% where everything's structured and taught privately, and where there's interaction on these Zoom types of meetings. And that's what my coaching clients get access to. But really, most of it is free. And there's an analogy that I draw. It took me a while to get my head around. It was kind of like, if you're giving away a marketing template for free, then you charge like a private coaching client or a private consulting client all this money to spend a day with them to essentially walk them through a free template. You know, what's going on? Like, how is that valuable to the client? But then I was thinking about, like, say, music. You can listen to an Elton John song on the radio for free. You can buy a song for 99 cents on iTunes. You can buy an album for $30, you can pay $500 for a ticket to a Elton John event, or you can hire him privately for a lot more money. So it's the same song, but it's a different experience and there's different value associated with that.
Yeah, 100%. And from my own personal experience, I always know the more I commit into a coach or a program, even hiring overseas coaches, traveling over there back and forth, I know I get more from the experience. One, it's just a cooler experience than it would be to download an ebook. And then two, the more I invest, the more I know that I have to do it myself.
That's right. Yeah, you're essentially buying an outcome or a result. Like, information is free. Same reason why people, you know, go to personal trainers, right? Like, you can look up a training session online.
Yeah.
But if you want the results, then it's often a much better investment to get somebody to hold your hand and hold you accountable. And you're much more invested when you're paying.
Absolutely. And for a lot of people out, there is that thing within us to not want to let other people down. So when someone is investing time in you, and that's in a face-to-face setting, you do feel like you really not only owe it to yourself, but owe it to them to really reward their intent to do it for them as well. And that's super powerful. So also what I want to chat to you about today is just obviously we're in an interesting time with the COVID-19. Just wanted to get an idea on what your opinion is on how people are handling it right now in the crisis state. Obviously important to know how you're dealing with a lot of business owners. How do you feel they're handling things, and is there hope moving forward?
There's no doubt that it's affecting lots of businesses all over the world. There's no denying that. In that situation, like, I've really ramped up the amount of free training that I offer through webinars and Facebook Lives for people in those situations. But look, with my private coaching clients, there's a fair array of situations that people are in. But there is opportunity. That's what keeps showing up. There's not everybody in the world is struggling. And so I'm advising my private coaching clients to have the conversations with people, lift your game in terms of communication, because there are people who have the budget, they've now got a bit more time on their hands, they need help more than ever. So we need to find those people and help them out. Now, it might be a slightly different offer to what we were a month ago, but people need help now more than ever. So whether it's free content for the people that are properly struggling, or a more premium paid offer for people that, you know, now using this opportunity to attend to stuff that they've now got the capacity for.
And you can definitely see that. Like, you're talking to people at the moment and they're super tired. They've been working longer hours. And for some people out there, I feel that they're actually working as hard for their clients now as they should have been or have promised at the start of the agreement. It's just they've been taking it quite easy for a long period of time, and now when they actually have to do the work, they're really feeling it. So I'm super interested into a couple of things. When, like, one, how long they can maintain that, and two, when we're getting towards the end of the year and the JobKeeper payments cease or whatever happens there, and we get a true indication of business's cash flow and seeing if they can actually maintain the businesses after that period.
Yeah, I think it's an incredibly important time now to be servicing your existing clients and looking after them, because probably there'll be loyalty, but also if you help them through, then, you know, why would they want to leave anyway?
Yeah, exactly.
Right, like, also, it's a huge opportunity too for audience building and building the trust with that audience.
Yep.
Like, even the people that can't afford you now, they may even cancel if they're in a really dire position.
Yep.
There's a whole bunch of people who, if we're being helpful and valuable with our content in particular, it's like social media usage is up, internet usage is up, email open rates are up, everybody's stuck at home on their computer, on their phone. And so now is the time to be building that audience, even if they can't buy now, 3 months, 6 months, 12 months. I think if you do the work now, you'll reap the reward further down the track as well.
So the disconnect that a lot of people have when coming to the new platform or even doing social media in general is they want the tactical step-by-step on, I need to do a status, or I should do a direct video or an image. They really want to be spoon-fed, if you like, the exact thing what to do, because it's not really natural to them. So what would you say is a good way to think about social media in terms of someone who hasn't really done much themselves, a way to get started or a way to approach it? What do you think the best way is to really get started?
Sure. So let's look at the actual content itself rather than the format that it takes first.
Yeah, cool.
So really at this point in time, clients and prospects, they're having conversations in their head and with other people already. Like, the world's changed a lot. There's certain things that they're thinking about already. So what we need to do is think about the conversations they're already having in their head.
Yeah.
And so once we can have a few conversations with them and understand what are the main dangers for them, what are the challenges right now? That is what we need to be talking about with our content. And so once we understand these conversations that our prospects were already having in their head, then we need to create that. And whether it's a video or an article or a status, that doesn't matter so much. But it depends really what you gravitate towards more. Like some people love doing videos, some people hate it. The format doesn't matter. But as a tip for what I'm seeing on LinkedIn right now is that uploading a PDF as a document is getting a whole lot of traction, in part because it's a new feature. So LinkedIn's giving it a disproportionate amount of reach. And so, it's so simple just to upload a PDF to LinkedIn, and that's a really nice way to be sharing that information.
That's good to know. I'm noticing a bit of a trend recently, or not even recently, it's been over the last couple of years, that people, and it doesn't matter, industry specific, tend to be sharing more life advice as opposed to just sharing what their particular service is. So it doesn't matter if it's in any form of coaching or even if it's like in a direct, like an accounting firm, they're still talking about how to handle stress and manage their days better and all these lifestyle types of information. Do you think that people should just stick to their lane? So if they're a pool man, talk about your pool. If you're an accountant, talk about how you can save people tax. Or do you think it opens up a window of connection when you do deviate away from your single lane?
I think each of us has our own specific expertise and our niches. That said, if we want to share more personal stuff in these times, I don't have a problem with people, you know, sharing their own struggles or sharing their own take on this period.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't necessarily be personally starting a whole new branch to my business that's outside of my lane. But that said, we do need to pivot slightly within our lane and just change our messaging a little bit.
Yeah.
But I tend to want to stay in the lane that I'm most comfortable in. Probably most comfortable is not the right word. My lane is, you know, our lane is where our expertise lies.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to be jumping too far out of that for fear of not being able to deliver on that properly.
And that fear and that delivering on it properly seems like a really great belief system to have behind what you put out, because it appears that people are just trying to get engagement and they think any engagement is good engagement. So talking outside of things you may not have experience in, I believe there should be more awareness around some negligence around that, because when people perceive you or listen to your information online, there's an element of trust that they give you into thinking that you actually are an expert in that, and they take your advice as something that it's tried and tested, when in a sense you may have only learnt it like a month ago, or you might have read a book about it last week, and now you're projecting out these new thoughts, and that's a great process because it allows you to understand it deeper. But I think it's important not for people to deliver it as solid advice versus like, here's what I'm working on, here's what I'm struggling with, here's what I'm thinking about this new process I'm dealing with. There's no truth or honesty there. It's just like, all right, here's this new message, which is a repeated version of something, a chapter in a book that I've just recently learned.
Yes, I share that thought there. You could do that if you were saying, look, here's an experiment, I've just started doing this.
Yeah.
I'm happy to share my journey and you come along on the journey with me. That's cool. But changing your stripes and all of a sudden being an overnight expert in something, share stuff that I know is going to be useful. Or if it's a new thing, put it out there. If it doesn't resonate with people, that's all part and parcel of the content marketing, to see what sticks.
Yeah, and I guess ultimately social media is a very new thing to us, and also working as a traditional business in social media is even newer. So we really have to, I guess, give a little bit of leeway and understanding to people navigating these paths. And when they are new to it, they're also seeing a lot of people have success in other realms. So you have your expertise, and then you see someone who appears to not have any expertise having mega engagement and hundreds of thousands of followers. You can see why it's enticing for someone to want to jump into and try to get themselves a little bit of that action. But yeah, it's definitely hard for them to find their feet, I'm sure. And if that was the case where someone was putting something out there and it may be a new concept to them, they're trying to even piece together a PDF or a video and really push out this new idea that they feel the audience is going to resonate with, what type of frequency and how much persistence would you have when putting that out there if you were had your own convictions on that it was the thing? At first, it didn't resonate with people. How often and how long would you keep pushing that idea and concept before you went back to your own drawing board?
Okay, so say, for example, I'd been working on a piece of IP. I'd put out essentially a beta draft version, like not fully formed, but enough to be able to see if it's resonating, with a view to getting feedback from certain peers or from the marketplace. If that didn't resonate on the first go and I didn't get much sort of feedback or commentary, I would still continue to refine it myself and maybe share a second version, because from what I thought I learned from it not resonating the first time.
Yeah.
If I believed in it, I would keep trying to mold it into shape.
So on that, do you have a set of questions that you ask yourself in that refinement process? Someone might be putting out a concept and then, or even if they've seen someone else do a very identical thing that seems to be getting killer engagement, but when they put it out, it's just crickets. Is there something that when they are looking to put out that second, third draft, refine based on what they believe the audience is there a set of questions or a way to approach it that can allow them to actually get a good result on their second and third try?
Yeah, I mean, to answer your question, like I typically would suggest people share stuff that they have tested out a little bit with their own clients.
Yeah.
I like, if I'm workshopping something or helping a client through a problem, then, you know, part of that process would be to create some frameworks or some IP around that. So I might then take a simplified version of that or a high level version of that,
yeah,
knowing that it's been helpful to a client, and then share that with the marketplace,
yeah,
as sort of like a bit of like a lead magnet essentially. And so I've got fairly good confidence that it's working internally and privately. Yeah. So if then it wasn't resonating in public, I'd know that, okay, it is good, it does work, but why isn't it resonating in the marketplace or resonating as a free resource, say on LinkedIn? So yeah, then I might just look at how I position that or described it. Maybe there was something in my communication of it.
Yeah.
But I would continue to work on that because I know it's valuable as a resource. I just haven't communicated that properly. So I tend to do most of my workshopping on my own business first, then with clients, prove that it works, and then take a simplified version of that to attract more people in where, yeah, I could go into depth of that challenge.
That's great. And I love the approach of actually thinking about your own current clients first and what ways you're delivering them value, how you're simplifying processes for them, and then taking what's working for your current clients and then moving that on. That's fantastic, because a lot of the time we can create all these new bells and whistles, try to appeal to a new audience, and this is one of the reasons why it may not resonate. It's because we're looking at what's working online versus looking what's already proven to help the people that we help, and that makes us the money we need to make. So a couple other things I jotted down that I'd love to talk to you about today is one, pods, and I'll get you to explain that in a little bit as well. And two, also, do you believe that you should go the organic route and just put stuff out there without any paid advertising? Or do you believe initially, especially when you don't have an audience potentially or a following, should you be doing paid social media advertising?
Okay, so let's talk about the pods. So an engagement pod is a group of people that I think they collude rather than collaborate. They collude to leave comments on each other's posts to artificially boost its visibility on the platform, because the thinking being that if more people comment, then it's going to show engagement, therefore we're going to get more visibility to other people. And I don't like that, because it's manipulative, in my opinion. So it's kind of like almost like a formal agreement between people, say 10 or 20 people. So every time you post something, Brendan, I promise to go leave a comment. Whenever I post something, you come and leave a comment on mine. And what ends up happening, in my opinion and experience, is that if it's the same 20 people commenting all the time, one, other people are going to notice, oh, this is a bit weird. How come Adam leaves a comment on Brendan's every time and vice versa. It's quite a popular approach. It's just not one that I endorse or get behind personally because it's, because as I've said, it's manipulative, but really other people are going to pick up on that. And therefore I think that can erode trust because they'll think like, if that's your approach to marketing to, you know, try and trick the system and collude with your friends to get visibility, that personally, that doesn't sit right, but people like to do it. But I think the algorithm's smarter than that too. Like if it's seen, if people can pick up on a pattern there that we're all just trying to manipulate the system, the algorithm I think will too. But the other thing too is if we engage in that type of behavior, then LinkedIn's probably going to show us, like if I'm always commenting on yours, I'm going to see more of your content in my feed.
Yeah.
And that's good, but the reason people are trying to manipulate it is so that other people see the content. But I think we would just create this effect where we're all just seeing each other's and we're not even achieving the goal of getting our content to spread to other people.
Yeah.
That's just my opinion. I've got no, what I do encourage is people to support their friends and support people in their network by all means. It's just the collusion to do that is bad. I think if you're just supporting me by leaving a comment because it's something I've said resonates with you and I did the same for you, there's no problem there as long as it's authentic and not just trying to trick to game the system.
And that does, like you said, tend to happen anyway, where people, you might see someone's post and you give them an authentic comment, which is more than just saying nice post or I agree or something very simple where you take in if they've written an article and you read the article and you pull in a deeper message from it. They really appreciate that, and that need to also reciprocate comes up as well. So if you have content out there, you'll find that they engage with your content as well, which I guess in a way is like your pod, but it's not an organized pod. It's just actually giving and giving back and receiving. So just moving on to the social media side of things, if someone's joined into LinkedIn, let's say, and they don't have this social network yet, and they do feel they have content out there, would you recommend that they put advertising behind that? Or do you think that people don't react as well to sponsored advertising posts?
Look, to be honest, paid advertising is kind of outside my lane.
Yeah.
It's not something that I have expertise in or personal experience.
Yep.
I always specialize in the organic side of things.
Sure.
So to comment meaningfully on that's probably outside my expertise.
Yep.
My approach in that situation, if people were new, would be to just focus on growing that network and continuing to share content and do it that way. I don't know enough about the paid advertising side of things, Jess.
So you as an individual, not necessarily recommending, but have you done any paid social media for your own business or own profile?
Certainly on LinkedIn, that's the case.
Yep.
I have dabbled in Facebook and Instagram advertising, but not enough to have any expertise in.
Understood. So another thought and something that I've just been curious on myself is how I guess these other social medias tend to have a lot of this similar content on it. So whether it be Facebook or Instagram or Snapchat, Facebook's starting to obviously die down a little bit in terms of that type of content, but a lot of younger demographics, do you think any of that type of sharing or type of content will migrate over into LinkedIn, or do you think it will just stay purely your business professionals only?
Look, my gut feeling would be it would stay business. Some people do tend to post more social content that may be more appropriate for Facebook and Instagram, and that's okay too, because a lot of business people are too scared of showing any personality.
Yep.
So I don't mind the fun posts on LinkedIn, but I think it would seem a bit strange for a business platform to try and enter into the sort of more social part where Instagram and Facebook's got that nailed. I think LinkedIn will probably just stay in its lane and realize it's a fantastic platform for the business world.
Yeah, that makes sense. So I guess the online fitness influencers and the at-home workouts haven't taken over LinkedIn just yet.
They haven't, but they haven't. Not that I've seen. Maybe that's a reflection of who I follow, but I think there is probably scope for a few. I think it's a big opportunity to be getting business clients for fitness people, but you don't see as much of that as certainly you do on Instagram.
Well, we'll see. I have a feeling that some of them will definitely sneak into that space pretty soon. So, Adam, I just wanted to say I really appreciate the time you've given me today answering those questions. I'm sure a lot of the answers in there and little tips will be really, really helpful for anyone who's looking to get into that LinkedIn space. So just for yourself, if you wouldn't mind sharing the information about where people can connect with you, people can find you, your book, all those sort of details, if you wouldn't mind just letting everyone know.
Sounds good, Brendan. So my website and business is called Blue Wire Media, and the website is bluewiremedia.com.au. On the homepage, you'll see a nice clear offer to download our web strategy planning template. That's a template that's been the cornerstone of our marketing and the cornerstone of what we teach clients. It's a double-sided PDF, and it's actually in its 10th year this year. We created it back in 2010. It's a free download that will sort of open the door to all of our other marketing templates. And I've also got my book, Web Marketing That Works. So that's available for sale on Amazon and on our website too. So they're the best places to find me, the website. If you want to look me up personally on LinkedIn, it's just Adam Franklin, and let's connect there.
That's great. And Adam, again, thank you for your time today and really appreciate you coming on.
Thanks for having me, Brendan.
And thank you, everybody, who tuned in for this episode. And we really appreciate you and giving us your time. Hopefully, there was some good information in there for you. And we will see you next time. Bye. Thanks for joining us on the show today. Be sure to hit that subscribe button. And if you love the episode and you love the show, be sure to share it with a friend. See you soon.